From marketing campaigns to product launches and more, plan, organize, and execute your team's work with Asana. Asana, how teams manage work. Try it free. Visit asana.com to get started.
This is your tech news briefing for Thursday, February 27th. I'm Kateri Yoakum from the newsroom of The Wall Street Journal. During protests, violence, and uprisings, governments around the world have increasingly been using a new tool to stay in control. They've been shutting down the internet. Our reporter Felice Solomon will join us to explain how they've been doing it and why nobody's stopping them. That's after these headlines. A federal appeals court in California has ruled that YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and other privately operated internet platforms are not bound by the First Amendment, meaning they're free to censor content they don't like. The case in question concerned a YouTube channel meant to advertise conservative ideas. The owner of the channel, PragerU, sued YouTube and its parent company, Google, after the platform flagged dozens of videos as inappropriate. The PragerU owners argued that YouTube's moderators were discriminating against its conservative viewpoint. For its part, Google argued that allowing PragerU to have a free speech claim could have, quote, disastrous consequences for online discourse. It's been a week for leadership shakeups at major companies. We talked about Disney's Bob Iger yesterday. The latest, the head of Uber's food delivery business, Uber Eats, is leaving the company. He'll be replaced by Pierre-Dimitri Gorkody, the current head of Uber's international rides business. The move comes as Uber Eats is trying to pull out of markets where it's not a dominant player. And MasterCard has chosen its next CEO, elevating its current chief product officer, Michael Miebach, to the role. Starting next year, Miebach will be responsible for pushing MasterCard to develop new payment technologies, like mobile wallets and business-to-business transactions. The United Nations considers access to the internet to be a human right. But last year, governments around the world shut down access to the internet with more frequency and less scrutiny than ever before. Our reporter Felice Solomon will explain what's going on. That's after the break.
Your job. You took it because it seemed interesting, fun even, but now you spend most days sitting in status meetings, updating spreadsheets, and slogging through email after email after email. Enough. Get back to the work you want to do with Asana. Asana strips away the bottlenecks and busy work so teams have more time for doing stuff like pushing boundaries and solving problems. You know, real work. Visit asana.com to try it free.
Around the world, governments have been increasingly cutting people off from the internet. According to Access Now, a nonprofit that advocates for free internet, last year alone, parts or all of the internet were shut down at least 213 times in 33 countries. That's the most ever recorded. A big part of the problem, there's very little mechanism for holding those governments accountable. Our reporter Felice Solomon joins us from Singapore to explain. Felice, thank you so much for joining us.
Hello.
So, Felice, why are governments doing this? What are they trying to accomplish by shutting down the internet?
Governments may have a number of aims. They may be trying to prevent people from meeting for mass protests. They may be trying to control what kind of information people are sharing with each other. In some instances, governments are trying to make it harder for people to communicate during times of conflict. Things like that. There are a whole range of reasons, and it's happening in a whole broad range of places, so it varies a lot.
A lot of countries have state-owned telecom companies, but a lot of countries where you found that these shutdowns are happening have privately owned telecom companies. How exactly are governments able to shut down the internet?
It's surprisingly easy. It's written into licensing agreements often when a multinational telecoms firm enters a market. They will have to be vetted by the government and given approval to work there. So it will be generally written into their licensing agreement that the government reserves the right to take control of the company's operations or to make certain demands of them in times of national emergency, during a crisis, things like that. So really what all they have to do is send them a piece of paper or make a phone call or send them an email saying, this is what we want you to do, and we want you to do it by this hour, et cetera. So it's really quite easy.
Have we seen any of these telecom companies pushing back?
Yes, there has been a little bit of pushback that dates back all the way to 2011, which was the first known example of a government ever ordering a nationwide internet blackout, which was in Egypt.
That would have been during the Arab Spring?
Yes, exactly. So it was late January 2011, and the government had ordered all of the operators in the country to turn off the internet completely. They did it, and then after that, they realized, you know, this is not normal. This isn't what we're here for. And they sort of got together and decided we should try to push back against this. What they ended up doing over the course of the next few years was trying to come up with reporting standards so that they would have a record of what types of demands governments were making of them. And this would give them a little bit of collective negotiating power when these types of instances happened again, which they inevitably did. So the number of companies that are pushing back a little bit is really quite small. But most major multinationals, some European companies such as Vodafone, Telenor, as we discussed a lot in the story, Orange, MTN in South Africa, some of these companies are trying to keep governments from taking advantage of them in this way.
I mean, I think that 2011 example is really poignant because the Arab Spring was one time where protesters really used social media to ignite support for their protests across the world. And actually, it spread to other countries as a result. What's been the outcome for citizens in the affected areas where these shutdowns have happened?
Well, first and foremost, it makes them really angry. We have seen a lot of displeasure in pretty much every instance where this happens. People notice when they can't use the internet anymore. It makes it much harder for people to organize. In a lot of mass protests now, people are using apps like Telegram and WhatsApp, things like that, to organize quickly and effectively, using these apps for collective decision making, things like that. So it makes it much harder for them to do that.
Do we see any parts of the world where this is happening more than others? Any countries?
Absolutely. India is by far the worst offender. According to Access Now, India shut down the internet. These were typically smaller scale shutdowns, but they've used shutdowns more than 100 times over the past year. And it's the frequency is increasing year by year. Aside from India, there are a few other examples. Venezuela has done it a number of times over the past year. Iraq as well has used this tactic repeatedly.
So these are places where we're seeing a lot of protests. Just this week, we saw massive protests in India. There's obviously been the issue of Kashmir as well. Are they specifically targeting these areas?
Yes, I think in a lot of these countries, they are directly targeting protesters. In some cases, it appears that the governments may be trying to prevent people from getting together in the first place. In other instances, it may be the case that the government doesn't want the rest of the world to know what's happening there. As we saw in Iran, for instance, when the shutdown happened late last year, there were a lot of allegations of police brutality against protesters. There was a bloody crackdown against anti-government protesters. And that's also happened several times in the past year alone.
It sounds like from your reporting that the telecom companies don't have a lot of recourse. What kind of legal recourse or what kind of legal support do the people have? And is there a way to, on an international level, prevent governments from doing this?
There's not a lot of recourse, to be honest, but this is something that a lot of civil society groups in various countries are trying to change. In India, there has been a concerted effort in recent years to challenge these types of orders in court, and they've had some success, as we saw in Kashmir recently. India's Supreme Court ruled in January that the internet blackout in Kashmir was unconstitutional because it violated free speech and freedom of expression. So that resulted in a partial lifting of the restrictions, but there are still some restrictions in place. It's yet to be seen really how effective these judicial challenges can be, but there's definitely some movement in that direction.
What about here in the U.S.? Are we seeing the government ask for access to telecom companies as well, and do we know about it?
Yes, there are definitely demands being made of telecom and internet companies in the U.S. I wouldn't say they're really comparable to a lot of the markets in the developing world where some of these problems are really prevalent. But there are definitely demands being made for things like subscriber information. This might be something like someone's home address or something like that. They can also, through in the U.S., typically there would have to be a law enforcement agency or a government agency would have to go through some type of legal process in order before they can get to the point of making the demand. So they might have to get a court order or issue a subpoena. And this is used sometimes to help law enforcement find a suspected criminal, for instance. These orders are also used to obtain information in times of emergency. The example people are most familiar with in the U.S. of the government asking telecoms for information is through national security letters, which are issued by the FBI. Until very recently, companies weren't allowed to disclose those, but now they can in a very limited fashion.
Just stepping back and kind of big picture, why, I know it may sound kind of ridiculous to ask the question, but why is this important? Why is this something that we should be concerned about?
Well, many people would make the argument, many people do make the argument that the internet is in a way a human right because this is the main method by which most people get their information in the current time. So if you cut off someone's access to the internet, you are in effect restricting their access to information and their freedom of expression. So this is recognized by the United Nations as a violation of human rights. But also practically speaking, it's bad for business. It disrupts daily life in most parts of the world. So it's really just not good for anyone. And often when governments use such really this sort of broad stroke to try to control populations, it can often backfire on them.
All right. Reporter Felice Solomon, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And that was your Tech News Briefing. Don't forget that if you like this podcast, you can rate and review us in your app store. And if you want more news about Wall Street Journal podcasts, you can follow us on Twitter at WSJ Podcasts. I'm Kateri Yoakum from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.